This is the Mooks and the Gripes podcast. Hello, everybody. I am Trevor, and more powerful than a locomotive, Paul. Paul, how are you doing this Saturday morning?
I am feeling incredibly powerful. I could probably even leap over a building in a single bound.
Nice.
Yeah.
That doesn't have anything to do with what we're about to talk about, I don't think.
I don't think so, but you never know with the way our conversations go. It could end up on Superman eventually.
There we go. Well, it's so nice to be back. For the first time in a while, we don't have a special guest with us. And, you know, special guests are always special and genuinely appreciated. We love having them. It's also fun sometimes to just sit down, you know, just the two of us and have a bit of a gab fest about some topic or another. You know, it's not quite as much pressure, I don't feel.
I agree. I always feel like I have to, like, it's like you're dressing up for guests or cleaning up the house. You know, I want to make sure that everything is in perfect order. And
is the toaster cleaned out?
Exactly. We're just in our PJs chatting.
So. Yeah, exactly. And we don't really have a topic planned or any thoughts.
That's right.
No, just kidding. We are good today. We will be talking, just so that folks know who maybe didn't look at the title of the episode, about authors we hope to someday be complete with, meaning we want to read everything they ever wrote. So we'll get into that in a minute. But first, a few matters of business. It's been a little bit. I wanted to thank some new Patreon/Substack subscribers. Thanks so much, Simon Slatum. I don't know if that's how you say your last name, Simon, but thank you so much for joining over on Patreon. And Kathy Ayton and Cameron Alexander. Again, everybody should know we really do appreciate that kind of support. The flexibility it gives us to do giveaways, to mail these things around the world, hopefully, which is usually more expensive than the books themselves.
Right.
And this kind of support really does go a long way. We have been negligent in bonus episodes for everybody. We do need to jump back on that. Sorry.
I know. No excuses. There's nothing to say except sorry.
Yeah, sorry. We do love talking. Like, I know Paul and I could do this, you know, multiple times a week.
Yeah, probably every day.
But it is tough to find the time and then the ability to sit down and record, you know. But we will be getting some bonus episodes out for folks who are supporting us that way soon. For everybody, we do have a special giveaway today. This giveaway is for multiple winners. We have four separate books from two of our favorite publishers. You can say four favorite publishers, but three of them come from one publisher and one from the other. And we want four of you to win one of these books. And Paul, why don't you introduce the books that you have to give away on your end?
Sure. So I have two NYRB classics to give away. The first one is Rock Crystal by Adalbert Stifter. I'm hoping I'm saying his name right. Do you know how that's pronounced?
All I know is that John Self always makes fun of his last name and asks another question afterwards.
Right. Yes, exactly. We'll let the listeners guess what that question might be. And that's translated by Elizabeth Mayer and Marianne Moore. So that's the first one. And I have not read this, although I do have, obviously, another copy. Have you read this one, Trevor?
I have. It's been a while. I really liked it. It's a good holiday book.
Nice. Cool. So somebody can, you know, get a jump start on the holidays or something.
There you go.
And then the second one, and I'm going to probably mispronounce another author name, is Divorcing by Susan, is it Tobes?
I don't know if it's Tobes or Tobes.
Tobes. So yeah, that was another one that's an NYRB women book. So if anybody is interested in that, that might be a good one to get on their shelves if they don't already have it. So those are the two that I have to give away.
I understand your wife gave you two copies of Divorcing.
That's right.
Once,
is that a bad sign?
No, what I understand is that you already had a copy and then asked her to get it for you for NYRB Women. And then when it came, you were like, wait a minute.
Yeah, I was going down the shelf. It was when I was reorganizing all of my NYRB classics and putting them all on a nice shelf together. And all of a sudden it was like, I had several where I'm like, wait a minute. So despite using Library Thing and being relatively organized, that inevitably happens to us book hoarders. So
yeah.
I'm happy to share it with somebody else and make sure that it gets out in the world.
That is what happened with my NYRB classics that I'm giving away also. I was organizing them, putting them in alphabetical order by author. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, if this happened with a few, but a couple of them you didn't have, so I was able to send to you.
Yeah.
But this one that I'm giving away is Q Miao Jin's Notes of a Crocodile, translated by Bonnie Huey. This is also an NYRB women author, and definitely one that's worth your time. People might be more familiar with Notes from Montmartre that came out. The big splash. It's quite the book. Mm-hmm. Notes of a Crocodile came out a few years later. But yeah, I was going through and lining up everything and thought, wait, they haven't published three of her books. Oh, it's because I have two of the same one. So yeah.
The last thing that either one of our bookshelves need is multiple copies of any book.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And then the other one is from Archipelago Press. It's a big one, and it came out late last year. It is Attila Bartas's The End, translated from the Hungarian by Judith Solisi. So those are the two I have. So just as a refresher, Paul, what ones do you have? Which two?
I have Rock Crystal by Adalbert Stifter and Divorcing by Susan Taubes.
And I've got Notes of a Crocodile by Q Miao Jin and The End by Attila Bartas. And so what we would like you to do, listeners, is two things. We need you to send us in entries. You can do this on, you know, DM, on Instagram or Twitter, or you can send us an email or hit reply to the Substack. Those seem to make it all to us. However you can get this to us. But we would like you to send in two parts to your entry. One, list the order of the books in your preferential order for what you'd like to win. We would hate to choose a winner for, say, The End, and it be somebody who already has it. So we'd kind of like to organize and make sure that we're not choosing winners who don't need the book. And that would be a helpful way to do it, if you'll kind of put in preferential order which books you'd like to win. And then, as a second part, we're going to be talking about completionism today, authors that you want to read everything they wrote. And so please tell us if you're a completionist with any authors, or an aspiring completionist, or if this is a new kind of thought for you that you're like, well, maybe there are some authors I'd like to do this with, or maybe I haven't thought about it, but I am doing it with certain authors. We'd like to know who those authors are, or, you know, maybe you're anti-completionist for some reason.
Right.
I don't know. I'd love to understand that better too. So put a part in there, you know, just responding to the episode. We'd love to share some of those in an upcoming episode.
Yeah, that would be fun. And it can be a couple sentences or it can be a couple paragraphs. But as mm-hmm. always, we just love to hear from you. And it's just so much fun to get insights into other readers' minds and habits. And, you know, it mm-hmm. just makes, like you said, it's fun to share those too. So yeah, so I'm pretty excited about this giveaway. It's been a while, and I like that we're doing kind of an extravaganza. Four books and spreading them all over the place.
And this is open for anywhere in the world. Your listeners from anywhere can enter to win. And again, that's why we are so grateful for supporters on Patreon and on Substack, because that's how we are able to, you know, get books for giveaways, though these are ones that, you know, we kind of accidentally got.
Right.
But we are able to ship them places and maybe put in some goodies and things like that as well. So very much appreciated.
You mentioned Substack. One of the cool things that Substack does is it'll show stats of where different people, you know, listeners and people who chime in on our conversations, where they live. And it is really cool to see, you know, the different people all around the world that are listening. It's pretty fun to think about that, mm-hmm. especially with our focus on world literature and everything. It's just really cool that not only are we reading from around the world, but we're also making friends around the world too.
All right. Last bit of information on the giveaway. You've got to have these entries to us by early morning on March 30th. That's when we'll be recording our next episode. And that's when we'll be choosing our winners, our four winners. So we get up and record, you know, 7:30, 8 o'clock mountain time in the morning. So just get them to us before then. Do your best. So we often do get some a day or two later, and you know, we're sorry about not being able to choose you as winners. But yeah, March 30th in the morning. So best to get it to us before March 30th.
Yeah,
I hope I'm making that clear.
As you're listening to this episode, you can just start jotting down your notes right away.
There you go. And even if you have all of these books or you're not interested in any of these books, you can tell us that, but still let us know your thoughts on completionism in any way. We'd still love to hear from you.
Absolutely.
So. All right, Paul. You know the question that's coming.
I do. I think I know.
Have you been reading?
Yeah, I've been reading quite a few books. I'm going to touch on a few of them today. But as you may remember, a couple episodes ago, we were talking about Alan Heathcock's story collection, Volt. And I told you I was planning on saying, unfortunately, this is the only book he's ever written. But then I kind of stumbled onto and realized that he'd actually written a novel in the last year or so called 40. And so I was looking around on Libby, which is that wonderful, audiobook app that many people might know about through the library system. And I found an audio version of his book 40. And so I've been listening to that over the past week or so and really enjoying it. It's quite a departure, I will say, from his stories. So if you're heading into it kind of with having read Volt and have that in your mind, I would kind of separate the two because it's very different, but it's still really interesting. I think I mentioned again on the episode, just a little background, it's set in an America that's kind of in the future somewhere. And this country has just been ravaged by natural disasters and multiple pandemics. And it's also facing kind of this fundamentalist uprising. So obviously you have to be in a certain mindset for this one because a few parts might hit a little close to home at times. But this fundamentalist group who's trying to take over is known as the Novatari. And they're gaining power and kind of working to win over the masses. So there's this civil war that breaks out between the members of that group and the U.S. government. So that's kind of the big backdrop. It's kind of a little bit of a post-apocalyptic sci-fi, I guess, type of a thing. But the narrator of the book is this young soldier named Mazzy. And she is basically trying to track down her little sister, Ava Lynn. And so this might be a little bit of a spoiler. So, you know, if anybody wants to go into it completely fresh, skip ahead a little bit. But I think it's worth mentioning only because it's one of the most interesting parts of the novel and it does happen pretty early. So one day, Mazzy wakes up in a bomb crater and she discovers that she's sprouted wings on her back. And so this discovery just creates kind of a huge mystery that drives a lot of the novel. How did this happen? Why did this happen? Is it, you know, related to something that the government has done, or is it, you know, radiation, or, you know, I haven't even gotten to any point yet where I know what's happening, but it's really fascinating. And so based on that, she becomes kind of firmly implanted into the political spotlight and becomes embroiled in everything that's going on between these two groups. So it's a really interesting premise. I would say it definitely has some kind of Hunger Games vibes to it. So I don't know if that appeals to anybody, you know, it definitely does feel that way. So anyway, it's been really fun. I don't know that it'll probably end up being on the level of Volt for me, which I really admire and would count as one of my favorites. I don't think this is on that level, but it's really a fun little book. So if anybody's interested in that, I would definitely have, you know, suggest that they check it out. And then, I'll just touch briefly. I've been doing a little bit, you know, some other reading, obviously working on our Savage Detectives read along, which has been a lot of fun, and continuing to plug away on my Gray Lamb and Black Falcon read along, which has also been great. And then I've also been trying to read more poetry to kind of prep for one of our future episodes that might be coming down the line. So I've been reading widely and kind of all over the place, but it's been really good reading.
Cool.
Reading period. Yeah. How about you? What have you been reading?
So I finished George Eliot's Adam Bede yesterday as of an online read-along. And then when I was done with it, I was able to start Anthony Trollope's Phineas Finn, the next book in the Palliser sextet. Mm-hmm. And so those are kind of the read-alongs I'm doing on Instagram of several. And Adam Bede, you know, I read it, I think I may have said I have the written in the back of the book when I finished it. It was like October of 2003. And I could remember it all right, but not super well.
Right.
But it was a lot of fun to get back in there and just to remember. I mean, this is George Eliot's first novel, and I still think it's a wonderful novel. It's not Middlemarch for me or anything like that, but man, she still has such wonderful places of human insight and a way of talking about it that is compassionate and humane. So very excited that I'm working on, you know, George Eliot over the next year and I don't know, year and a few months or something like that. And getting back to another Trollope novel. I just love them. It's so refreshing to get that back to that voice.
I've been wondering about that because it had been a little while since you had mentioned him on the podcast, and I wasn't sure. I mean, I know that you hadn't like given up on him, but I didn't know if you had been kind of plugging away in the background or if there'd been a little bit of a hiatus or what was going on. So
only a slight hiatus. The group I'm reading it with is doing one every 2 months. Last year we did it one every month and I kept up on that. And so I finished Can You Forgive Her really early in the last read along. You know, like I think everyone else took most of the 2 months and I took a couple weeks. It'll probably be similar with Phineas Finn, which we just started at the beginning of March. And I didn't feel the pressure to jump right into it on March 1st because I was finishing up Adam Bede. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it'll take me too long.
Yeah. Nice.
just really enjoying that. But one thing that I think we're both very excited about and that I started reading last night and just kept on going because it's so propulsive, so compelling, is Mark Haber's upcoming novel, Lesser Ruins. It doesn't come out until October, but, you know, Mark's a friend, coffee house are friends, and we got advanced reader's copies this past week. Yes. Shortly after the cover reveal that they did, we were able to get a copy, and I started this last night, Paul, and I read maybe 20 pages and I could have kept going, but then, you know, it was getting late and my wife was done with some of her things she was doing. And so I put it down. But I wrote to Mark and said, I want to engage with this with a pen, but I'd be highlighting everything. And the other problem is I'd be stopping to write down things or to highlight. And it's just so hard to stop because each thought just keeps going, keeps building, keeps reiterating. The rhythm is part of it. And I just think it's fantastic. I mean, and I think it's worth maybe reading the first sentence to people.
I agree.
You know, and, We'll touch on this again, I'm sure, as it gets closer to its actual release date. But here's some build up some hype. Get excited for this, folks. And if you haven't read Reinhardt's Garden or Saint Sebastian's Abyss, well, go do that. You've got to get on them and then jump on Lesser Ruins. But here's how it starts. Anyway, I think she's dead. And though I loved her, I now have both the time and freedom to write my essay on Montaigne, an essay requiring not only extraordinary focus and intellect, but also time and freedom. Time and freedom being necessary for the composition of my essay on Montaigne, since freedom, specifically financial freedom, will provide the means to set my plans in motion, meaning the time required to visit the libraries, universities, and archives vital to finish the book-length essay I vowed more than 20 years ago to complete. And then we just get going on this idea of time and financial freedom and distractions and are my ideas any good anyway? And, you know, I love my wife, but she has died. It's just, there's so much in these first few pages and I don't know where we're going. You know, I don't know how this is all going to play out, but again, I'm in good hands and if I sit down and start reading this, I could easily, you know, watch an hour or two go by without even really realizing it.
Easily. Yeah. That I just dipped into it a little bit last night. I didn't read quite as much as you, but even the first couple of pages, I can already tell this is going to be, you know, like his previous books. So like you said, propulsive and just one of those where if you can get into that rhythm, it'll just carry you along. And the fact that the little bits I know about it, it seems like it's about obsession and art and grief and among other things. I mean, it's ticking a lot of boxes that just fit into exactly what I like. And then on top of that, it's written, like you said, by an author you know and trust. So yeah, like you said, anybody who has not read his other books, you can read those to kind of kill some time until October. And then obviously pre-orders are always so valuable. So if this is of interest, I would suggest you just go ahead and snatch it up, and it'll, that way it'll come to you right away in October. But really, really excited about this one.
Yeah. And I know Mark is one of our friends, and he's been a guest on the podcast talking about New Directions. I do want people to know I'm not just plugging a friend's book.
No.
I am grateful to be friends with him because I love his books. I love interacting with him. I love getting his book recommendations. I love hearing how he's, you know, what he's working on and how he's doing it, because I genuinely feel like these are important, wonderful books. And I've been looking forward to Lesser Ruins for a couple of years now, since he said, you know, he's finished another one and all that. But so thanks, Mark. And I do hope people trust that we aren't just, you know, plugging a friend's book.
Right.
We're kind of friends with him for multiple reasons. And they all have to do with our love for books, including his.
Absolutely. I mean, like you said, even back when he was selling books for Brazos and working over there, he would send me wonderful recommendations. He has absolutely impeccable taste in literature. And then, like you said, on top of that, he just happens to be this incredibly talented friend of ours. But yeah, no, I agree. It's not anything, there's no nepotism or any of that type of stuff going on. I mean, these are genuinely excellent books. So anybody who hasn't checked them out definitely should.
All right. Yes. By the way, on the topic of completionism, there is a selection of short stories I have not read by Mark Haber, but I'll get there. He'll be an author. I'll read whatever comes out.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, completionism. This topic came to us because this past week we were so lucky to join into a Zoom party. You know, I had my birthday hat on and some, you know, stars and things around me because it's our friend Jackie's birthday that we were getting together. I won't give too many details. You know, sometimes people want to keep that relatively private, but it was so fun to get on there and see several of our friends and just talk about books and reading. And Nora was on there. Mm-hmm. And as people may remember, last week we talked about Barbara Cummins and Nora's project to read everything she could get her hands on by Barbara Cummins. And we just started talking about what other authors do you want to read everything they wrote? You have done that, or you've been working on that, or what are authors that you haven't maybe even read anything they wrote, but you just know that that's who they are. Mm-hmm. You know, yep. You're excited to get there. And we thought, let's do it. Let's have our conversation play out in a little bit, you know, over more time with the two of us. And go through some of these ideas. You know, what does it mean for completionism? Is it a goal you have with many authors? And then talk about some authors. Maybe we have read everything they wrote. Maybe there are some we're close to. Maybe there are some that we're excited because we're at the start of that journey. So what do you think, Paul? I mean, is this something that appeals to you, or you... It just happens. You know, I know you're complete on some authors, but
yeah, I have never thought of it. I mean, I guess I've never thought of it as like something I'm actively seeking. Like you said, so far, I would say for the most part, those that I have reached this completion level with, it's been just because of the fact that I just love them. And so like, I'll just pick up everything they write as it comes out, generally speaking. But there are a couple I'm actively working on. And so I think like maybe having these conversations with you and, you know, just following along with people online has kind of, like a lot of these other book projects that we have discussed, it kind of gets into your mind a little more, like maybe something you were doing not necessarily consciously, but now it's starting to turn into something that you're targeting. So, you know, I wouldn't say that it's, for me, it's very dependent on the author, you know, for sure. It's not something that I know a lot of people, like once they get in with an author that they love, they will just read back to back to back to back, you know, everything they wrote. And I definitely don't have that tendency. Even when I, for the most part, even when I am working on an author, it's kind of sprinkled in with other stuff. I don't think I have that type of personality where I necessarily want to completely immerse myself. But then I say that, and I think about our recent reading of Scholastique Mukasonga, where I did read all of them right in a row, and how rewarding and rich that was. So that's where it's like, like so many things around my reading life, it's like this ongoing conversation with myself. Like, I don't think that it's necessarily something that I do. And then I'm like, well, maybe I should a little more, you know?
What do you think? So I think that's an interesting idea. What do you gain from really focusing on an author, whether it's over a long period of time or whether it's, you know, in a burst, like we both did with Scholastique Mukasanga. We're both complete. And by the way, I thought there was another one that was kind of saying, hey, this will be coming out soon. And it hasn't been announced yet. So hopefully soon.
Wait. Yeah. That's interesting. I'm trying to think if I've ever really had any author where I've read that many books right in a row, you know, because there were so many that were already published and I hadn't read any of them. But one of the things I remember about reading that particular group of books so closely together is you pick up, for one thing, on like themes, and you know, there's like echoes and ripples that come out in different ways in the books. But I also think it's something where if you get into that rhythm with the voice and it's the right author for you, I mean, it just feels so right to me. It's not something where you have to like kind of reset. You know, a lot of times when you're reading a certain book and then you stop and read something else, for me, at least, it takes a little while to readjust and get, it's like, you know, putting on a new pair of shoes or something like that. You have to break it in a little bit. I really enjoyed the fact that just going from one to the next, even though they were such different books in many ways, it felt more comfortable to slip back in quickly. But her particularly, I mean, Scholastique Mukasanga, there was just so many little subtle things that I may or may not have picked up, you know, between, in particular, some of her books that were more on the fiction side versus some of them that were more memoir. And you could see the stuff that happened in her life, you know, playing out in the novels, in the short stories, you know, maybe not directly, but it was kind of, I don't want to use the word fun because for those books, that's definitely not the right word, but it was fascinating to see something that you'd read about in one of her memoirs come up in a slightly altered form in one of her, you know, pieces of fiction. So yeah, I would say that's kind of one of the, or a couple of the neat things about reading them in a burst like that. What do you think?
So, you know, in Roberto Bolaño's 2666, you've got the part of the critics and they start listing authors, fictional authors, but they start listing the books that they, you know, the titles. That always gets to me. And I'm like, I want to read all of those books, titles. I want to have that library in my head. And so there is that aspect of certain authors just have a kind of an aura that it's an oeuvre I want to have explored. And in some ways it's because the author themselves has a life story that is part of the art. It's not their life. I get that I don't know these people and I won't know them and I can't know them through their, you know, 12 books that they wrote, but there is still something worth exploring because it is a project. It's a life's project. And Bolaño would be one of those. His life and his philosophies are quite fascinating to me. This is not an endorsement of any of these authors or, you know, their philosophies or their perspectives on the world. It's just that for some reason, I am okay when Roberto Bolaño's computer files get kind of published in snippets.
Right.
Because I'm interested to see where he was going with things. I'm interested to read what he wrote because I don't think he and I would get along. I don't espouse, you know, the visceral realism, right, as a great philosophy for life and especially for relationships as we're going through The Savage Detectives, which incidentally is the only Bolaño book I have not completed yet. So once I have, I am a Bolaño completionist, but I find it fascinating to be able to explore an author's work. Cesar Ayra is another author I am complete on, other than I just got the review copy of the two, like the double pack that's coming out from New Directions here in June, I believe. And it's been killing me to not throw everything else I'm reading aside just to jump into it. Yeah. But you know, I know that I'll get to it and I'll enjoy it. But again, he's got a variety of stories, a variety of things going on, but there's his artistic sensibility and his artistic philosophy this kind of falling forward that we talked about on his episode mm-hmm. that I think makes it so that even if he writes a book that I don't love the plot or I don't love the characters, I still want to read it because it's part of this bigger work of art.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to do that for the completionism. Now, that's one aspect of completionism, finding an author who you feel really does have this, you know, the bigger story is, you know, the compilation of all of their works and not really maybe all of them individually. But then you get someone like Jane Austen, who, yes, her life and her you know, the history, the social issues, the class issues, the gender issues are all definitely part of it. But I just love every one of those stories for the story, too, that I would love to read everything. I've read all of her novels. Mm-hmm. I have not read all of her Juvenalia or her, you know, Sanditon. I didn't read, you know, the unfinished things like that. But the six that we talked about in our episode, I consider myself Jane Austen complete-ish.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
But I read her for the life. You know, I love Jane Austen, recognizing that even though I've read biographies and such, I don't really know her, but there is that art behind it. There's that life story, this other story with that is encapsulating all of the books. Mm-hmm. But I also just love each one of the books individually, that they're just so good to get into. And so there are multiple reasons, I think, to fall in love with an author and trust them and be willing to go where they're going to take you, because you either just know you're going to love the story, or you know you're going to be invigorated by engaging with their life and their work.
Yeah, I agree. I was thinking about that too. Somebody like Austen, you know, she's a great example because it's a relatively small number of novels. So I imagine there's a lot of people out there
who yeah.
are completionists, at least to that degree. And like you said, there's so many similarities between the books, but they're each so different. And one of the things I like about the idea of being a completionist is tracking. If it's an author you truly love, you can see the maturity and the changes that take place in their writing style, you know, from the first book, where maybe you can see some glimmers of who they're going to be, but maybe there's a few holes or it's a little clunky here or there, whatever. I'm not talking about Jane Austen specifically, but just, you know, for an example. And then you can kind of see them mature over time and grow and change. One that I'm actively working through right now, which I've talked about, is Cormac McCarthy. And I mean, I'm basically there in piecemeal. There's a few of his things that I've not yet read, but I'm, as I've mentioned, starting at the beginning and working my way through. And my hope is to even hit, like, you know, The Stonemason and some of these other that are like screenplays and things like that. So he's a perfect example where in his earlier books, we've talked about this a little bit, you can see those glimmers of greatness, and, you know, maybe they're not completely to the level of some of his later work where you can tell there's a maturity and a confidence there. But I kind of like that as you track an author's career. And then I was also thinking, like, Stephen King comes to mind for me. I don't know. I'm not a completionist because he writes them basically as fast as you can read them these days. But there was a time where, you know, I started reading his stuff when I was probably in, you know, middle school, I imagine. And so he had a fair number of books already out, and I was reading them as fast as I could, and I caught up, and then I would read every new book that he came out with for probably a good decade. And so for a time there, I was a completionist with him. And it's that same kind of thing of it's almost like you have like this good friend and you know everything about them, you know. And like you said, I realized that we don't know these people in real life, but there's something kind of cool to have somebody that you just loyally follow along, and they continue to send you these, mm-hmm. you know, it's almost like in his case, he would even like do those intros, dear reader, you know, and like, you just felt like it was your buddy who was writing for you. So there's all kinds of different ways to do it. Like whether you're reading a classic author who everything they've written has already been done for 100 years, but you can just read them all. Or if you can catch up with an author and then just read as they come out, there's different, I don't know, it's very cool in different ways.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. Like Ira, for example, mm-hmm. we get new books by him coming into it too in English, and we will for a long time, even after he is gone,
yeah,
because he's just written so much. At least I hope that that will keep on happening.
Right.
But yeah, then you've got, you know, one of the authors that I talked about earlier, I finished Adam Bede. I am working to be George Eliot complete, and it's there. It, you know, I can see every book. Mm-hmm. I know what she's written. There aren't any others coming. And that can be a little bit like, oh, well, do you save some of them? You know, we've talked about that a little bit in the past.
Yeah.
And the answer is probably sometimes you're tempted to do that. And other times you just keep going forward, you know, just get through them and then you can start rereading them and having those joys. But yeah, George Eliot is one that I'm an aspiring completist with George Eliot. And I think I have been for some time, but I really have only read maybe three of her books, mm-hmm. and including Adam Bede, which I now have reread. So I'm excited to get to some of the ones that I've just always had sitting there waiting for me to finally say it's time.
Yeah.
And again, there's her whole work, but you know, we've got even someone like Marilyn Robinson that I am a completionist on. I've read all of her five novels. She's getting up there. I don't mm-hmm. know if we'll get more, but there's a possibility. And so it's incomplete, you know, it's incomplete completionism.
Well, speaking of that, like somebody like Marilyn Robinson, this is obviously up to each person, but for yourself, do you consider yourself a completionist if you have read all their novels, but maybe not their essays or some of their, I mean, we could go pretty extreme. Like some people, it could be letters or, you know, journals. Like I was thinking about that because again, there's no rules. This is all very personal, but I think for the most part, for me, completionists would probably be whatever they're both best known for. Like if they're a fiction writer, then it would be their novels and short stories. But I wouldn't necessarily myself feel the urge to have read every journal and every letter that they ever wrote, you know, even if they were published. Mm-hmm. Like I wouldn't necessarily consider that part of it for me.
And maybe this is the thing I was talking about earlier, where sometimes it's the author that you're exploring mm-hmm. and not always, you know, the books are a part of that and you love the books too, but it's the author you're exploring. Yeah. So for example, I've brought this up on the show before, but another author that I'm actually close to having read every one of her novels. I may only have one left. And that's Virginia Woolf. Mm-hmm. And it's Night and Day. It's the next one I have to read, but I last year got her diaries, which I had read pieces of, you know, 20 years ago when I was in grad school and working on Virginia Woolf. I had read pieces of them, and I've read some of her short stories, but not all of them. And so I put together a spreadsheet that starts at her earliest short stories. You read those four, and then you read her diaries, her earliest diaries up until her first book, The Voyage Out, is published. Then you read Voyage Out, and then there are more diaries and more short stories. So I tried to figure out when were each of these short stories published? When was the novel published so that I can read her life and everything that I can get my hands on that I can find that she wrote, including essays, including, you know, the novels again, and these short stories, each one of them, because again, I think it's a life worth exploring as well as each of her books individually. And so for her, yeah, I would consider myself a completionist had I finished all of her novels or close, you know, I would put her as I'm pretty close to completing it, even though I actually have probably quite a bit left when it comes to diary entries or short stories or essays. But I'm looking forward to that. But there aren't others that I'm just not going to do that with. You know, I don't like Marilyn Robinson, for example. I have never read one of her treatises on religion or on passages of the Bible or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I'd probably be interested in it, but apparently not enough to go and get it. But I still consider myself complete with the aspects of her work that I want to explore. And if she writes another novel, I'm going to go and get it. Yeah. Have I ran out and bought the most recent thing that she did? I think it's on, what is it, on the Books of Genesis or something? I didn't rush out and buy that, and I probably won't yet anyway, you know, mm-hmm. it hasn't, but we did just do a book club where we did Gilead, and I didn't get a chance to reread it entirely, but I thought, you know, I can see myself jumping back into these books and thinking I want to supplement it with some of her other perspectives and views, even though maybe those aren't always things that I, again, espouse or agree with. That's not what I require for completionism. Right. You know, Philip Roth, I'm pretty darn close to having read everything that he ever wrote. I do not think it's because I really just love his way of life or the way he explores his themes or what his themes are even. I do love his writing, and I do think that his perspectives are important and worth grappling with, in part because we need to understand them and understand what makes some people the way that they are, mm-hmm. so that you can work through all of that, you know? And so again, when we list some of these authors, it isn't because we're reading them because that we agree with their perspectives on life to the extent right. we even know them. But you know, I can see myself getting into Marilynne Robinson's other work to supplement it, but it hasn't gotten to that point yet.
Yeah. No, I like that point you made. It's just like we've talked about with authors, like some people I know need to like an author. I mean, need to like a character or relate to a character in a book. I am absolutely not that way. And I think that that can carry over to the authors in some ways. It's can be interesting to read about a character or read an author who you fundamentally disagree with. And I think it's healthy in a lot of ways for people to kind of broaden their perspective and bump up against those uncomfortable, you know, intersections. So no, I like that point that you made. And I was trying to think, like, with the whole question of reading minor works and things like that. So with Professor Ray, who we had as a guest a couple of years back, who was my Jane Austen professor, she did have us read like Jane Austen's Juvenalia. So I can count that as stuff that I've read, and Sanditon I've read too, but we do have a big, nice folio edition of her letters, which I will admit I've not read, but I will still consider myself a completionist. But a couple of other authors that are very different that I am a completionist on is Zsubha Lahiri, which will surprise no one since I rave about her all the time. But that does include all of her, you know, nonfiction on the art of translation, or she had one called The Clothing of Books, which was all about, you know, just the actual physical objects of books. And it was just this tiny little, almost like a chapbook. And so unless there's anything I'm not aware of lurking out there, I think I'm a completionist on her. And it's what you said about, not only do I love her writing, but she just fascinates me as a person. She's so, you know, smart, creative, intriguing, the way she's like just uprooted her career after winning the Pulitzer with her first short story collection and, you know, having all these successful novels, and then just decided like she was going to move to Italy and just start writing in Italian. Like something like that is like, I was already going to probably read everything she ever wrote, but something like that just makes it all the more intriguing. So the person themselves, or in a very different vein, David Sedaris, like he's such a fascinating guy to me. He's silly, but like he gets pigeonholed as a comedy writer, but he is so smart and so insightful. My wife and I went and saw him read and got a chance to chat with him for a few minutes. And just somebody like him is not necessarily an author that I would normally probably consider to be my thing. But for him specifically, he's just such a interesting guy that I've ended up, he's published two big collections of his diaries over the last probably 4 or 5 years. And they're big. And I've read every single one of those too. So it's funny, like there are those authors that just, they call out to you. And even if it is a bunch of their journals or just a little tiny kind of minor work, you are drawn to do it. So that's where it's tricky, because it's not always something that you even are consciously doing. It's just, you do it out of love, I guess. You know, you just, mm-hmm. you're not checking things off the box. It's just like, oh, I haven't read that. I'm going to pick that up. And all of a sudden you realize, oh, I've read everything they wrote.
So there are a few authors that I'm either close to completing or have completed that I do see their books of letters, for example, out there and think I would like to get those, like William Maxwell, for example. I have two more of his books left to read before I've read every one of his books. I don't like his short stories nearly as much as his books. I've got the LOA editions, so that I think I have all of them. You know, I think I have his complete fiction, including novels and short stories. And I haven't been as enamored with his short stories as his novels, but I do want to read some of those letters. You know, he communicated with other authors and had friendships and thoughts. He was editor of fiction for The New Yorker for such a long time that I'd like to read him. But also, my perspective of him, again, through his work and some of the things I have read by him that are a little more personal,
yeah,
is that he was engaged in literature because he had some compassion for humanity. And I would like to explore that a little bit more through his letters and the like, but maybe not really ever dig into a short story. So I'm okay, you know, putting parameters around what I mean by really deep, digging deep and exploring an author's work fully, even if it's not like I'm going to write their next biography, so I need to know everything.
Yeah, you know? No, I agree. I think that's, like, we've talked about that with book projects, is it can become almost homework, or it can lose its magic if you overanalyze it. So I like that idea. And I'm in the same boat where it's completionist for you based on what you have the interest mm-hmm. in. You know, like if it is novels and you finish all their novels, then that's good enough, you know, for certain authors.
Here's a question for you.
Okay.
Authors who have disinherited one of their books.
Oh yeah.
You know, like, for example, John Williams.
I was about to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He kind of repudiated his first novel, Nothing But the Night, published mm-hmm. in 1948. And it was hard to get your hands on a copy, but I had read Butcher's Crossing, Stoner and Augusta. So this is an author, you can read everything they wrote pretty, you know, in short order. Plus, he had some excerpts of his forthcoming never published novel in like Plowshares, I think. And I went and read those, but I never had read Nothing But the Night. Kind of thinking, well, maybe it just, you know, he didn't like it. Let's respect it. Plus, it's hard to find. I've read everything he wrote. But then NYRB Classics publishes it.
I know.
And there it is. And when it came in the mail, I started to read it. And I loved it, Paul. I loved Nothing But the Night. Not as much as Butcher's Crossing, Stoner and Augustus, three of my all-time favorites. But I still loved it for what it was. And I still thought it was interesting. And like you said earlier, you know, it shows an author developing, but also not just like, oh, I'm learning how to write a sentence. It's their ideas, the germination of thoughts and perspectives that are still unique and still bursting out in ways that I don't expect. So I can see those things starting. And I thought, I'm really glad that I read Nothing But the Night, even though John Williams probably wishes I wouldn't have, or, you know, at least whether he cared one way or the other, at least didn't care enough to want to keep working on it and get it published and make sure it was available to people.
Yeah, no, that's a really interesting question. Often it is a first book or an early book that authors end up repudiating, but it makes me think about, I don't know if you've seen in the news, but Gabriel Garcia Marquez, he has that
new
book coming out that, what is it? How long ago did he die? A decade, maybe? Ago, I think.
Yeah, I think it was basically a decade after is what they're shooting for. So,
and
yeah,
you know, near the end of his life, he was struggling with dementia and other things like that. But he made it very clear to his family and his sons in particular that he wanted them to basically burn this or whatever. And they, over the last 10 years, have kind of gone back and forth. And now they've decided that they're going to go ahead and release it. So it does get interesting when you get into some of that mm-hmm. type of thing. Like, he's not one that I have really enjoyed a lot of his books, and I own most of them or many of them. I don't know. I could maybe end up being a completionist on him over time. It's not uh-huh. like an active project, but it would be interesting, like you said, to say you finish everything except for that last book. Is that enough to just kind of push you over the edge to read one more? I don't know. What you said about John Williams is really interesting, because that's the only one of his that I've not yet read. And clearly, if I hadn't had those kind of reservations based on how much I love the other three, I would have read that one a long time ago. And so it, I will admit, it probably has kept me from picking it up and reading it. But now this is the second or third time you've reminded me of how much you loved it. So maybe it's time.
I think so. I think give it a go. It's short. Mm-hmm. So it's not like, you know, I don't think it'll spoil anything for you.
Yeah.
I don't, but you know, do whatever your heart desires, Paul.
No, it definitely, you said, NYRB publishing it is like the cherry on top. You know, it's like if you needed one little more shove to have it in this nice, beautiful edition sitting right next to the other ones, like who would turn that down? Not me.
Do you have it?
I do. Yeah, I do.
So and you're so complete in purchasing.
I am. Exactly. That's usually, that's a whole separate conversation.
Good at that.
Exactly. if that's what we're going by, then this could be a whole different discussion.
Yeah, look at all these authors. I have everything they ever wrote. You know, I've got the Isaac Bashevis Singer 3-volume LOA complete. I haven't read very many of them, but I love them, what I have read. I've got, you know, the complete stories by Peter Taylor, which I told you a few years ago, I had the goal of, you know, kind of working on that year.
Mm-hmm.
I still haven't read a single one of them since then. So, but I'm complete. I've got them.
Oh, yeah. See, if that's our measuring stick, then I'm a completist for Edward Gibbon's The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, all 6 volumes.
Nice.
I've not read a single word of it, but I own them all. So,
well, that's a lot of clout, though.
It is. It is, for sure. No, it is. It's a fascinating, it's like so many of the things that we talk about. I love it because it's the way that we approach it, to me, is what makes it fun. It could be one of those things that you could be a source of stress, but I think it's just more take it however you want to.
So this actually brings up a question that I think this is a fun way to address it. How many authors have you bought all of their books because you just know you want to read them all, even though you haven't started and you haven't gotten too far? So let me give you a couple of examples while you think about it. I have gotten everything by Penelope Fitzgerald.
Mm-hmm.
I bought them all after I read Offshore and The Bookshop.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. And she, you know, had several more early novels and then several more of her later historical novels, a collection of short stories. And I went and bought them all. And I have over the years worked to read through them, but it was just that sense of I'm going to be complete on her books. In fact, I put together a list on my blog, my Pantheon. These were authors I was either, let's see, how did I put it? Personalist of some of my favorite authors whose work I talk about most often here and there. My main criterion for compiling this list was this. Once I finish a book by the author, I want to read everything that author has written. And so I put some that I had read everything, like Jane Austen. I put Ira, Bolaño, Willa Cather, Cutsey, Louise Erdrich, and then also Penelope Fitzgerald. And I think at the time that I put this list together, I had only read 2 of her books. Again, I've worked through many more. I haven't finished it yet, but I do love that sense of having that. It's like Bolaño's 2666. There are all the titles.
Yeah.
There's that complete set.
Yep.
All that work that you can sit down and one day know I will have that in my head until I forget it the next, you know, we don't talk about that, but
right.
I will grapple with all of that. And Penelope Fitzgerald is one of those. Muriel Spark. I don't have all of her novels, but I'm pretty darn close.
Yeah.
And Barbara Pym.
Yep. I was about to mention she's one for me for sure.
And Elizabeth Taylor. I have all of her. I have all of Elizabeth Taylor's books. I'm probably halfway through having read all of them at this point. But I went and bought them usually after reading and loving just one.
Yeah.
And I think that's a fun way to look at this too.
I do too. I do it a lot. Barbara Pym for sure. Anita Bruckner. I don't think I own all of them, but I own way more than I've read so far. way more. Obviously, Zola. I shared on a recent episode and on Instagram. Yeah. Having not read a single word by him, I bought that, what is it, 18 of the 20 in the series. it's definitely, I mean, other ones, if I don't own all of them, I own pretty close to all of them without having read nearly as many, like Nabokov, who's one of the ones that I was going to mention is one, eventually I hope to read everything that he's ever written. Charles Dickens, I own everything that he's ever written and I'm still making my way through, but that's definitely like, as far as ones that I aspire to read for sure, all of them, Dickens, definitely. Krasznahorkai, I don't own all of them, but I'm pretty close and I've read, you know, several and loved them. So yeah, I definitely do have that tendency. Robert McFarlane, Richard Yates is another one who,
I think there's him like on my list as well.
Yeah. Maybe that I don't own all of them, but pretty close. And I could go on and on, but also like Zabald and William Faulkner are another two that I own most of their books, kind of the same based on loving one or two, and then I bought them all. So that when we get to the like its aspirations, a lot of these will come up again later in this conversation, but those are a lot of the ones where you buy them out of this hope and this excitement that, I don't know, I think that's part of the fun, like you mentioned. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. Are there any that you've bought all their books because, you know, some trusted friend has seemed to love them so much that you're like, I'll get these, but you haven't read any of their books yet?
That's a good question.
I'll give you one.
Okay.
Beryl Bainbridge.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't read any of her books, but I have most of them simply because she was always shortlisted for the Booker Prize, never won. Mm-hmm. But a lot of friends who have explored her work have really, really, really enjoyed them. And so I've gotten them, but I still haven't read any of them.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. There's just several of those that would have qualified probably a year or two ago. But now I will admit, like, in the last probably year or so, I've started to do more and more of them. Like Javier Marías, I bought a bunch of his stuff, having never read a word of his, and that has changed over the last year or so. And like Bernhardt, I would say, was another one where I bought quite a few, having never read a word, and I've started to. So yeah. I'm sure there's other ones I'm not thinking of, but I would say that's been a tendency of mine for the last probably, what we always say, 15, 20 years, mm-hmm. where somebody on Palimpsest or somewhere would be raving about an author and I would buy five or six or all of their books and then slowly start making my way through them. So, yeah.
Yeah. Gerald Murnane is another one. I have read one of his. I can't remember, but I got a handful of his mm-hmm. just on The Promise.
Yep. Matthias Enard, and I finally did read one last year. Clarice Lispector, same thing. Mm-hmm. I had her whole giant collection of stories and several of her little slim novellas, mm-hmm. and I did read, is it The Hour of the Star? I believe that's what it's called, last year. So, like I said, a few of them I've been like starting to at least chip into the beginnings of them, but I'm sure there's other ones on my shelf that I have multiple. Oh, you know who else? Knausgård. I've read only the first two of his My Struggle series, but I own them all. Plus, I own three or four of his other books beyond that. So he's another one where I just buy everything that he comes out with and still need to actually read most of them.
We probably need to follow up these talks with some type of therapy, you know, how to probably process these things and actually get through them. Or maybe this is just some of the joy, you know. Simon Thomas, I brought this up when he was our guest on the show, you know, he says there is a difference in the pleasure of buying and collecting books and the pleasure of reading them. They are both important. We all love them, but they are different, and it's okay to indulge in both.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think this promise of you know, reading and loving a book or an author is so much fun to talk about and explore.
Me too. No, that's a lot of fun. Just real quickly, I think I don't know why my brain, a minute ago I said Bernhardt. I meant Sebald. I don't know where Bernhardt came from. But
I figured you meant Bernhardt, Thomas Bernhardt.
Yeah, I did not, but... yeah, although he would be another one that might qualify for,
He qualifies for me. I have maybe 10 of his books and I've read two of them. Yeah, but I bought them because I'm going to read them all someday. I'm going to be a Bernhardt expert,
I don't know.
Then I read Mark Haber and I'm like, this is good. I think I got some of the,
I got the gist of it. Are there other ones that you, just actively are either working on now or that you have, somewhere in your head? Like I mentioned Dickens, like it's not like I'm actively going through them, but just I know in my mind that he is one that I plan to finish, everything that he's written, or Nabokov, for example. Are there others like that?
Well, on my list of ones I have completed that I haven't talked about yet would be Alice Munro.
That's true.
Yeah. Really love her work, and I've read all of her collections of short stories, and there's, I think, just one, but there might be two stories that were published in The New Yorker, but that didn't make it into her final book. And they're some of my favorites, so I don't know why that happens sometimes.
Yeah.
But her, and then an author that I will probably always be aspiring to be complete on, and am with the short stories, even though there's a bunch of them, is William Trevor.
Yeah.
But I am not complete on his novels, but there's, I would a bunch love of those to be. Too. Yeah. He's got a lot of them, and I only have a handful of them. I think I'm waiting for the day when I finally indulge and dig in and start that project to really, you know, go break the bank and, you know, get the pennies out of the piggy bank and go get all the rest of them. But
actually
he's definitely one.
He would be a great example of a friend of mine who happens to be you. Getting me so excited about it. I was going to look and see. I own 10 of his novels and his selected stories. And out of that, I think I've read a couple stories and two of the novels. So that's your okay. influence. Yeah,
that's good. Well, and I believe that this year's summer book club, because the last 2 years we've had William Trevor on the list and he's always close but never wins.
Yeah.
Didn't we say mm-hmm. it's going to be a William Trevor book? We'll just vote on which one.
Yep, we did.
Is that okay?
I love it. Yeah.
Good. So
good, for sure.
We'll get through some of his, but man, I just love his work. What did you read, The Piano Tuner's Wives yet?
Yes.
Is that one of the short stories?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Based on your raving about it, and you're right, it's just amazing.
Did we talk about that one? On a short story episode, like a reading, an assigned reading. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And I think we even had him reading an excerpt of it, if I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
We had him.
Yeah.
He joined us up.
Exactly. A little seance. No, the couple of his novels that I have read, like Love and Summer, for example, they're just beautiful. And I don't know how, you know, he's written a lot of novels, so I'm not going to claim to know all of them based on the one or two I've read, but you can see the same sensibilities and the same talent and the same view of humanity shining through. So I think he would, he would definitely be deserving of being a completionist goal, you know?
Mm-hmm. Do you like to put up, again, going back to 2666, do you sometimes just get excited when you see them on your shelf and see the titles of the ones you haven't read yet and just, what is that going to be about?
I spend a lot of time. I mean, like, again, this is like a therapy session, but like,
it counts as reading, by the way. You're reading the titles.
It does. Yeah. It does. No, I mean, I know for some people seeing bookshelves and stacks of books and, you know, 60 or 80% of them you haven't read or whatever, I know for some people that's a source of stress. For me, I really do get a sense of comfort and excitement out of it. When I look up at the shelves, like, we have books in our living room, we have books in our bedroom, we have books all over the house, and I'll just find myself looking at them, not just during times of stress, but like anytime, but especially like sometimes if you're stressed out, you just look up there. It's almost just it's like a comfort to me. So no, I absolutely, it's, like I said, I think for some people it can become a daunting thing. And I could see maybe for some people, like, the idea of aspiring to be a completionist on a certain author could turn into a project or a stress. But I think for whatever reason, maybe it's personality or whatever, but I am able to kind of view it as more of like something that's just a fun thing, that's something to aspire to, but not to cause stress.
Well, I don't want to end with this next question because it's maybe a bit of a negative take.
Okay.
Maybe. I don't know if it is or not. Let's see where it goes. But are there authors that at one time you were completionist on them and just everything they came out with, you were so excited to get your hands on them, and maybe you've stuck with them in spite of that, but that you are like, I don't know if I will continue. And I'll give you, I've talked about them already. But like Kazuo Ishiguro, I don't like his last few books. I just don't like them. Yeah. I've articulated why. They're real reasons. It's I'm like, what is this? This is not The Remains of the Day. You know, this isn't The Unconsoled. Yeah. You know, those are, at that time though, I couldn't imagine that I would ever not like be super excited to read the next Ishiguro book. At the same time, if he had a book coming out this year, I'd go buy it and read it because of where I once was with him. And I feel kind of the same way about Ian McEwan. Yes. I've stuck with him. I do read his books when they come out, and his, I probably get along with a little bit better, but they're not quite the same as some of his early stuff for me, but I still, you know, what was it? Was it called Nutshell? The one about like it was Hamlet with the
In Utero or whatever.
In Utero. Oh my gosh. I thought that was so Ian McEwan. and it was a lot of fun, but I didn't really like the was it Piano Lessons or the Lesson? I didn't really like that one that came out last, and excuse me. I didn't like The Machines Like Us. I thought that was just blah and so underdone in terms of real science fiction examination of AI and such. I mean, I've just read things that are so much better. And so, you know, I, at the same time, do get excited when I see something new by him, because I'm like, at least I will love the writing usually.
Right.
And so, but there are some that I'm, you know, I'm like, if it kept going this way for long, I'd probably stop buying their books when they come out.
Yeah. It's a good question. I was thinking, I mean, I know there have been some for sure. And I already mentioned one, Stephen King. I mean, but some of that is more of like, I don't want to say you like grow out of them, but maybe that is true. I don't know. But there was a time where I could not have conceived of the idea of never picking up another one of his books. And not to say that I wouldn't ever do it, but I definitely, you know, don't feel that urge that I used to anytime. Like the day it came out, I would be at the bookstore with my cash in hand. Or like some of the fantasy authors, like, you know, Robert Jordan, for sure. Like there was a time where, you know, granted there was like 10-year gaps, which was part of the problem between everybody.
Yeah.
But I would pick up everything that he read. But then I reached a point where I just kind of lost interest and just stopped buying them. Like those are two that come to mind. But the two you just mentioned, Ishiguro and McEwan, are definitely ones where I would say I'm on the same. They're ones like I might get them now from the library. I would probably still have enough interest to read them, but it's not nearly to that level of like around the Atonement Saturday, you know, era when I was really like dying for his next book. It's definitely faded. I'm sure there are other ones that I've kind of lost interest in to the point of not even purchasing them.
But you've so much lost touch, they're not even in your mind right now.
I know, exactly.
I've old friends, favorite, you know, relationships and
I know.
Just dust.
I'm a loyal guy, but I guess apparently it only goes so far. Yeah, now you're going to have me thinking. I'll have to follow up maybe in another episode if I can think of those, because that's a really, I like that question, because I mean, it's only natural if you're a lifetime reader like we are, and you read at the volume and in the frequency that we do, and on top of that, you're introduced to so many new authors or undiscovered gems like we've talked about, there's only room for so much. So it's going to make sense that over a course of the lifetime, either just by the necessity of how few books you can read in a lifetime, or that you change. People change over time, you know, so therefore things aren't going to be as appealing as they used to be. You know, it only makes sense that there's going to be those that drop away.
It is fun to, you know, kind of going back to the other part, though, it is fun to think of those authors. And this is a little different than The Completionist, but it is linked, that if they had a new book coming out, you'd pre-order it. You'd be at the bookstore on day one. You'd clear your schedule, maybe take a day off work or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's so fun to think of that excitement. And, you know, sometimes maybe there's been a bit of a letdown on when the book is delivered and in hand and you read it, but oftentimes that's not my experience. It's still just the joy of exploring a new thing, you know, a new work by a favorite. And so, you know, a lot of these authors that I've mentioned are ones that I've been doing this with for a while now. And so I know, you know, they came to mind easy when I sat down to think about this. I would like to explore my reading log over the last couple of years and see which ones I expect to become this.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I've only read one, maybe they only published one book and I read it and loved it. And when their next one comes out, I'll think, oh, I remember really liking their book. I'll have to check that one out. And then I'll get it and think, oh, I loved it. You know, who are some of the up and coming authors that this will be a new favorite relationship with, you know?
Yeah, I like that. I mean, a couple that pop into my head almost immediately are Fernanda Melchor.
Like, yeah.
Ever since I read Hurricane Season, I say all this like knowing that I always have these reservations because I'm like, maybe if I looked, there are some other ones out that I don't know about in English. But as far as I know, I've read everything that she's come out with, you know. And then Esther Kinski is another one that came onto my radar, you know, within the last 5 years or so, I would say. And she's one that I definitely could see being the type where I just pick it up as soon as it comes out from her.
What about John Darnielle?
Yes. Yeah. That's a good example. Yeah, me too. Yeah, no, for sure. My wife and I was driving her to the airport today, and one of the songs by the Mountain Goats, which is his band, came on, and we were having a discussion about just, he's one of those authors that I will admit I don't necessarily like his music, which is kind of weird. I've grappled with it because how can you love an author so much but not like another thing that means so much to them? But anyway, yeah, he is absolutely another one that I pick up everything that he comes out with now. It's really fun to like have these ones that pop up on your radar that you just didn't know anything about, and all of a sudden they turn into favorites. There's a couple of the Charco authors, Charco Press, that are kind of like these. I don't know if they're new, but new to English, and they're ones that I could see turning in. Claudia Pinheiro, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I really love her stuff.
I think it comes back to one of our favorite topics, publishers, you know, our favorite publishers.
Yeah.
When they get an author and they are faithful to that author and keep publishing their books, making, you know, commissioning translations of older works to bring them out while they're still, you know, keeping up on their new ones, and, you know, New Directions and Charco Press are prime examples of that, you know, that they have a lot of, you can go and click on the author's name on their website and you'll just get quite a few, you know, and it may be, and a lot of them are relatively young authors still.
Yeah.
Writing from, you know, other countries and other perspectives. It is exciting. It is exciting to, you know, what is it? Selva Almeida. That I just read I'm blinking on the book, and it's the Not a River.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a fantastic book, and I was delighted to go to their website, click on her name, and see that they've published 3 or 4 others of her books. And I assume that they will kind of continue to do that as she comes out with more. And she's young, you know? So it is fun to think of. You know, I mean, we both listed dead authors and some authors who are in their 70s and 80s, a lot of them, not all of them that we listed, but many of them that we did. But yeah, we're still young bucks. We got to have these relationships that go on with the people who are starting right now.
Yeah.
You know,
that's a great point. Open Letter is another one. They're very loyal to authors and they do a great job of giving them a chance and then sticking with them. So yeah, like you said, it's so fun. To have these beginning relationships where you're catching somebody earlier in their career, and then you can kind of follow along and read them as they come out, on top of the ones like Dickens, where you just can take your time and you know what's left and you can space it out however you'd like to. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
No. All right. I don't know how I'm going to do the show notes this episode, since I usually do books, and, you know, we talked about some book titles, but then we also talked about a bunch of authors.
It's true. You could just do author notes maybe,
or maybe just list names of authors.
Yeah. Although that'll keep you as busy as usual, I guess.
For sure. We'll see. But I am, you know, this is more of a wide ranging conversation about, you know, even though we may have listed particular authors, I think it was a lot of fun to do that, but also, you know, the more general ideas behind this and, you know, which ones give you that spark of excitement about the promise of future reading or rereading for that matter. And so just as a reminder for folks, we do have this giveaway.
Yeah.
4 books. Get your entry into us by the early morning of March 30th. List the book that you want, you know, list the books that you're interested in, so we don't send you one that you've already read. Unless you want us to, then just list it. You know, we're not going to ask too many questions. Right. And make sure you tell us a little bit about your thoughts on these ideas and particular authors who spark this interest in you. I'd love to hear about it. Again, even if you're not joining the giveaway, I would still love to hear about it. Let us know.
And I would almost guarantee you that when people start listing either the ones that they have completed or the ones they want to, that both of us are going to be like, oh yeah, me too, me too, me too. That's one thing I'm noticing about this conversation is I think we could have multiple parts to this. Maybe we'll have to follow up in a year or two, because I think these are the kind of conversations that I love, because they spark excitement and aspiration and uncover somebody that you maybe forgot that you wanted to, you know, it's this could be an ongoing thing for sure.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, Paul, we didn't babble on for too long today. This is one of our shorter episodes in a while. That's okay.
That's okay. Very reserved of us, I would say.
Yes. Yes. But I'm hoping it'll give us both a little bit of extra time to read today. Yes. Go read The Savage Detectives. Chime in on there. You know, I think people would love to hear how you're doing with it. Yeah. I would. I've caught up. I am caught up on it. And it is nothing like I thought it was going to be. But even though it's the last book by Bolaño I've ever read, it is not like any of the rest of his works in style. It's stylistically so similar. It's thematically so similar. Its structure is even similar to 2666 in some ways. And to like Nazi literature in the Americas. Like, I'm like, I see it all here, but this is not what I was expecting. It is not familiar to me, this combination of all of this. It's really not what I was expecting, you know?
No, me either. I have not read nearly as much Bolaño as you have, but based on the ones that I have read, I've been very surprised too. But as always, he's just so fascinating, so easy to read.
Yeah.
In some ways, like, or at least, again, propulsive, we already used that word from Mark Haver, but it's a page turner, which if you...
It's just so weird.
I know. If you tell somebody the format and the topic and the number of characters and like, it would not be a page turner, and yet somehow it is. He's magic.
Yeah, it's been fun. So I'm enjoying that project so far.
I am too.
You know, then I'll check off Bolaño's completionist project as well.
Impressive. That's very cool.
Then you'll have to start over. It'll be a little bit
weird. Yeah.
Yeah, there are some. I mean, I've reread a few of my favorites of his. And there are others that I haven't reread that I've been wanting to. Mm-hmm. And this will give me a chance to do some of that. But
yeah, like you said, we have plenty of reading time today. So maybe you can just, you know, finish up all that and start on some other new project.
Oh, man, my nightstand is a...
Mine too.
Oh,
yeah.
We don't get a concussion about everything
one of these days.
Yeah. We talk about this all seems so ideal, like, oh, I'm reading this and that, and it's just been so wonderful. And then I'm like, do you know how it's sitting there that I've been looking at or that I've even started but haven't been able to, you know, because of other things have put aside? It's stressful. It's awful. Ah, yeah, I have that too, folks. So.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Absolutely. Well, we'll have to start chipping away today. And like you said, please send us your thoughts. We look forward to hearing from everybody. This is going to be fun to give away. We'll take some of the books out of our nightstands and send them over to yours.
Here we are, our doubles.
Exactly.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody. We look forward to hearing from you, and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Mooks and the Gripes podcast. You can follow the Mooks and the Gripes and get show notes and book and film reviews at mooksandgripes.com. On Twitter, you can follow Trevor at Mooks and Paul at BiblioPaul. You can also get information about future shows on our Patreon. If you'd like to donate to the show, anything and everything, even a dollar a month helps and is deeply appreciated. You can become a Patreon at patreon.com/mooks. Until next time.